Good morning. It is good to be together. Thank you, Roger. Let me go ahead and invite the young ones to Well, I can't top that, so. All right. Well, it is good to be together. We will break bread here, aka barbecue here, in just a little bit, but before we go there, I want to invite us to turn to Exodus again, also known as Sefer Shemot. If you're grabbing a pew Bible, page 62, the words will be, as usual, on the screen behind me, diving into the Jesus backstory, working our way through what are the first five books of the Bible, what are collectively known as the Pentateuch, what in Judaism is called the Torah. Again, the Torah being divided into 54 parshiot. And maybe you're aware of this, but we have traveled through the first 20, and we are now hitting the 21st. And so we are today at Parsha Kitisa. Kitisa picks up at 30 and 11 and travels through the end of 34. Again, we're not going to cover all of that, but I do want to just begin with a brief synopsis. Moses here, he is up on Mount Sinai. He is receiving the final instructions for the building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle. Then there is a little bit about the Sabbath, and then we come to 31 and 18, where we read, "When the Lord finished speaking to Moses on Mount Sinai, he, Yahweh, gave him, Moses, the two tablets of the covenant law, tablets of stone, inscribed by the finger of God." And from there, we get a pretty abrupt sort of change. We get this, maybe we could even say a seismic kind of shift. Noting it moves from God and Moses up on the mountain, having a nice conversation, and it moves to the people down below, and they are completely unhinged. We read they cast an idol in the shape of a calf, and they build an altar. And then we read Lehikol Veshato, translation, they are eating and drinking, and we're not talking grape juice here. So they are eating and drinking, and then Vayakumu, they get up, it says, to indulge in Leitzahek. It means to party. It's translated here as revelry. It's this idea of to joke around or to make fun. Underneath that, though, there is this idea or this sense of mocking. And so then we go back up on the mountain, 32 and 7, and we read here, "The Lord Yahweh said to Moses, 'Go down, because your people,'" which I think is interesting, Moses, your people, not my people, these are your people now, "whom you brought up out of Egypt, have become," it says, "corrupt." Shehet in Hebrew. To be corrupt, it means to bring to ruin. It means to be filled with decay, to destroy. They are going, in a sense, they are going to ruins. They are destroying themselves. They are filled with decay. He goes on, verse 8, "They, the people, have been quick to turn away from what I commanded them and have made themselves an idol cast in the shape of a calf." Verse 9, "I have seen these people. They are stiff-necked," and we can think hard-hearted here. We can think callous, cold. "A stiff-necked people." Verse 10, "Now leave me alone so that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them." And so what was this beautiful connection right up on the mountain, now we see Moses, he's coming down and there's all kinds of corruption and things are out of control. And we read that he becomes angry, he shatters the two stone tablets, he burns up the idol calf in a fire. It says he grinds all of that into a powder, scatters it on the water, and makes the people drink it. Now, as far as stories go, I think this is pretty fantastic. I mean, it's nothing short of kind of this high drama, right? There's all kinds of intrigue here, and it really kind of grabs our attention. But in that, it also invites us to move away from maybe what is less intrigue, less dramatic. It makes it kind of easy to skip over then what are the opening lines. And it's here that, in Parsha Kitisa, that the opening lines really offer us a portrait of the heart of God. It's a portrait that's flowing underneath this passage. It's a portrait that's flowing underneath all of the corruption and the decay and the destruction. It's a portrait that really flows under all of the messiness of life. I think then and there, and even here and now. We find it here beginning with Exodus 30 and 11. Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe l'amor, then spoke the Lord, Yahweh in Hebrew, to Moses, saying, and here we have Kitisa, it's the name for this parsha, Kitisa et Rosh b'nei Yisrael, translated when you take a census, or it's this idea of when you take a sum, when you count, and it says b'nei Yisrael, the children of Israel, meaning the Israelite people. And so basically, when you are counting this number, when you're adding up the sum, they not sue each one must pay the Lord, it says, a kofar. In Hebrew, that's translated here as a ransom. It can mean a bribe. It's this idea of making a payment to avoid punishment. And really, at the heart of it is, it's that idea of making amends. And so to make amends at the time he is counted, and then, meaning so that or as a result, no plague will come on them when you number them. And then we get a little bit more of this detail. Verse 13, each one who crosses over to those already counted is to give, it says, a half shekel according to the sanctuary shekel, which weighs 20 gerahs. This half shekel is an offering to the Lord. All who cross over, specifically here, those 20 years old or more, are to give an offering to the Lord. And then verse 15, the rich are not to give more than a half shekel, and the poor are not to give less than. When you make the offering to the Lord, when you teruma, kofar, offer amends for your lives. Now, I'm hoping that in some way, at this moment, you're asking yourself, what in the world does this have to do with a portrait of God? What is this counting and this numbering and the making of amends and gerahs and half shekels and the plague? What does all this have to do with a portrait of the heart of God? Which are great questions, by the way, so thank you for sharing those with me this morning. And so to get underneath that, I want to kind of dig back in here for just a few minutes, but we're also going to travel over to 2 Samuel. We get a nice visual there. I want to invite a couple of rabbis to come and share. We'll eavesdrop on a couple of their thoughts and the Mishnah as well, and then we'll wrap up with three brief vignettes from Jesus. Noting again this parsha, it begins, then spoke Yahweh to Moses. And then again, we read, Ki tisa et rosh b'nei Yisrael, when you make a census, when you take a census, when you gather up the sum, right, of the Israelite people, we read, Lifkudaihem v'natnu ish kofar, when each one must pay the Lord, each one must make that amends, make that offering. And then it says, at the time, the moment he is counted, and then we get this really, I think, interesting line. We read, then no plague, negef in the Hebrew. It's this idea of to afflict. It can be to injure, to stumble. Then no negef, no affliction will come on them, no plague will come on them. It says, when you number them, which again is interesting language, and maybe even a bit odd. I mean, again, what is this connection between counting and a plague? We could ask, why is it that numbering them, why is it that numbering the Israelite people would bring about affliction? And we get a live episode, actually, in 2 Samuel 24. I'm not going to read the whole chapter. It's really kind of interesting to go through and read the whole chapter, and so I invite you to do that later. But the opening line here, we read, again, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he incited David against them, saying, go and take a census, the sum of Israel and Judah. So the king said to Joab, and the army commanders with him, go throughout the tribes of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba or Beersheba, and enroll the fighting men, so that I may know how many there are. But Joab replied to the king, may the Lord your God multiply the troops 100 times over, and may the eyes of my lord the king see it. But why? Why does my lord the king want to do such a thing? The king's word, however, verse 4, overruled Joab, and the army commanders. And then if we skip down to verse 8 for a moment, after they had gone through the entire land, they came back to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. Verse 9, Joab reported the number of the fighting men to the king. In Israel, there were 800,000 able-bodied men who could handle a sword, and in Judah, 500,000. Verse 10, David was conscience-stricken after he had counted the fighting men, and he said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. Now, Lord, I beg you, take away the guilt of your servant. I have done a very foolish thing. The result of that, verse 14, David said to Gad, I am in deep distress. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is great. He was given a choice here of kind of three different options of plagues. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is great. But do not let me fall into human hands. So the Lord sent a plague on Israel from that morning until the end of the time designated, and 70,000 of the people died. Something which Rabbi Sarah Gershuni, she notes, according to the Talmud, David's error was one that even school children know. One must not count the Jewish people. And then she goes on to point this out. She says this, our human value is innately immeasurable, as anyone grieving a loved one will attest. No one is or ever could be just a number. The Mishnah, which is that written collection of Jewish kind of oral law, reminds us this. It says, when a person mints a coin, each coin from the mold is identical. But not so the Supreme Ruler, the Holy One of Blessing, for each human is minted from the mold of Adam, and yet no two are alike. Which is why then again from Gershuni, Rabbi Gershuni, she says, King Saul numbers his forces by having each man contribute a shard of pottery. And the Talmud describes the counting of eligible priests by a similarly indirect method. Even today, to know if there are 10 eligible adults present for a prayer quorum, it is customary to count indirectly using a biblical verse with 10 words. Again, the point here is that we are more than just a number. Right? And so whether it's a half shekel or whether it's a what does it say here, a pottery, a piece of pottery, whether it's verses from the Bible. The point is that we're not counting the people, that we are more than just a number. Yes, we're patterned in the mold of Adam, but no two are alike. Which is why the text then goes on, and it says this, verse 13, each one who crosses over to those already counted is to give a half shekel according to the sanctuary shekel, which weighs 20 gerahs. This half shekel is an offering to the Lord. All who cross over, those 20 years old or more, are to give an offering to the Lord. And so they're not being numbered, but whatever it is that they're offering in their place is that's being counted. Verse 15, the rich are not to give more than a half shekel, and the poor are not to give less when you make the offering to the Lord. The point here is that each life, every life matters. The point here is that each one has value and worth. And even deeper than that, the point here is that each one has equal value. Everyone has equal value and equal worth. That when you're counted, whether you're rich or poor, the count is the same. Right? Whether it's a shard of pottery or whether it's a half shekel. Point being that each one, everyone, every person is of equal worth and value. From one of the most renowned rabbis of the 20th century, Rabbi Schneerson, the late Rabbi Schneerson, he says, people differ in their intellect, character, and talents, in the quantity of their material resources, and the timber of their spiritual sensitivities, but all are equal in the very basis of their bond with God, the intrinsic commitment to Him that resides at the core of their souls. So, while everyone contributed to the making of the various components of the sanctuary in accordance with their individual capacity, all gave equally of the silver of which its foundation was made. As regards the foundation of the relationship between humanity and God, the rich one cannot give more, and the pauper cannot give less. Again, right, this is the heart of God. This is a portrait of the heart of God. Each one, everyone. Right? Each one, everyone is more than just a number. Each one, everyone is unique and precious. Each one, everyone has value and worth. Each one, everyone has equal value and equal worth. And it's that heart of God then flowing in and through. We see in the life of Jesus, Matthew chapter 8, verse 1, Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy, meaning he was an outcast. He was an untouchable. He was one considered of no worth and no value. Says he came and knelt before Jesus and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. Right? Jesus said, "You have value. You have worth. You are of equal value and equal worth." John 9, Jesus was going along. He saw a man blind from birth. Again, this would have been the dregs of society, one that has been pushed to the margins. Jesus says, spit on the ground, made some mud, put it on the man's eyes, and the man went and washed and then came home seeing. Mark 9:36, he took a little child, right? Again, a child that in that society considered to be among the lowest and the least. Whom he placed among them, taking the child in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name, whoever values a little child in my name, welcomes me, and not just me, but the one who sent me." Right, over and over again, we read this heart of God, and this heart of God that's manifest then in the life of Jesus. Right, where each one, everyone, is more than a number. Each one, everyone is unique and precious. Each one, everyone is really a deeply valued treasure. You are a deeply valued treasure. Each one and everyone has value and worth. You have value and worth. You have equal value and equal worth. And that is the heart of God. And that is the heart of Jesus, and it really then comes to you and me. Is that your heart and mine? Is that your heart and mine? We could ask, does my attitude toward others reflect that heart of God? Does my activity toward others embody the heart of God? Right here in this room and outside these walls, with people that think like me, talk like me, walk like me, and people that don't. Friends and family, neighbors, strangers, does my attitude, does my activity, does it reflect, does it embody the heart of God? Do I view every other as more than just a number? In some ways, I think that has been a sin of the church. That we count how many people we got. Well, we got to get the number up. Problem is that, as Sefer Shemot, it's the book of names, right? Names matter. Right, every person has value and worth more than just a number. Do I view every other as more than just a number? Do I esteem all others as unique and precious? Do I regard every other as a deeply valued treasure? We could ask, do I show respect for the worth and value of every other? And then, to kind of bring it to a close, to whom is God inviting me to live this expression of his heart? To whom is God inviting me to live this expression? Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe l'amor, then spoke the Lord to Moses, saying, Kiti Saad Rosh B'nai Israel Lifkudehem. When you take the sum of the Israelites to count them.